can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey, and today our theme is movies based off of TV shows, kind of. And I feel that I probably could have done this theme, just even without trying, probably a couple of times over, because everything has to be rebooted or remade nowadays, and yet somehow it just didn't work out that way. But I knew I was going to be watching the new Mission Impossible movie, and I knew it had been based on a TV show, though I did not know that until I saw, like, the fourth Mission Impossible movie, and I did see all of them, at least in order, even if I did not see them anywhere near the time they actually originally came out for most of them. But when I heard that, I was just like, you, what? You, there was a TV show based off of this? How was there a TV show? Because these movies seem to constantly be, he works for this secret government entity, something goes wrong, they disavow him, so he has to figure out what went wrong and solve that problem so he can be, like, undisavowed or something. I'm just like, so what, he was just, like, disavowed each week or something in the TV show? What happened there? Because you do get that that famous opening that everyone, you know, at least knows if they don't spoof along with the dun 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 of the theme song, where it's like your mission should you choose to accept it, but if you and your team are found out, the secretary will disavow all knowledge of you and this mission will self-destruct in 5 seconds, and those little sort of tropes. And it's just like, this was a TV show, like, every week with self-destructing missions and your mission should you choose to accept it and disavowment. Huh? Really? And also considering the fact that it's a somewhat older TV show, it's not like the TV show was on only a few years before the first movie, it was, you know, a few decades, you kind of do have to wonder, what did the technology look like at that time? Because they obviously didn't have the technical ability, special effects wise, to do the things we can now do with, you know, computers on glass or computers and books and all the tech stuff is actually pretty cool in some of the Mission Impossibles. But so anyways, for this one, this is Mission Impossible Fallout. It is the sixth film, which my mother did not actually know. She had ended up watching Mission Impossible 5 with me because I had to quickly watch it on TV because I hadn't seen it. So I watched it like a few days before going to see this one. And so I was like, okay, well, you just watched the fifth one with me, so I'll take you to see the sixth one. And as we're leaving, she's like, so I think there's going to be a Mission Impossible 3. And I'm like, what? What are you saying? It's like, after this one, that one was really good. I think there's going to be a Mission Impossible 3. I'm like, there is a Mission Impossible 3. That was number 6. What are you talking about? And past the third one, you don't actually get numbers in them. So it's not too, you know, it's somewhat understandable that she didn't know what number this one was on. It's a little strange that she didn't know we were certainly much past 3, because she has seen 4, so okay. But anyway, so this one is interesting because it's the first Mission Impossible that actually directly ties story-wise to a previous movie. The other ones tie in somewhat character-wise. So as you go through the movies, the previous movies are all still canon, almost. They definitely did happen. And so you get characters going through the movies, to the fact that it actually turns out Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames are the only actors who have been in all 6 Mission Impossibles. And Benji, I think, has been there since the third or fourth one. But those are the main three people in this film. And, you know, the audience is definitely used to seeing them. So it feels like it's a team, even though when you kind of look at the history, the team kind of keeps changing. So it's only those three, and that's not really a set team. And it also feels like, is there literally no one else in the IMF? Seriously, it's only like a half dozen of you, really? But anyways, in this one, it ties in directly story-wise, whereas in the last one, somewhat spoilers, we caught the bad guy, Solomon Lane, who is now being held for questioning by like pretty much every foreign secret government agency. People want to break Solomon Lane out, and Solomon Lane has some information that will help them find some missing plutonium that we're afraid will be used to build nuclear bombs. So Ethan Hunt and his team needs to get to Solomon Lane before the bad guys kind of can. It's not that the bad guys are trying, it's not we're racing the bad guys, it's just we want to keep Lane from falling into the bad guys' hands. So we get Ethan back in the IMF, which in this one does actually exist, has not been destroyed or disavowed, as we saw in some of the previous ones. The IMF is kind of running the show, but in the same way where it sometimes feels like there's only six people in the IMF, it also kind of feels like the IMF doesn't really have a budget, because we get Henry Cavill's character, Walker, who works for the CIA, which is run by Angela Bassett's character. And Walker has to go along on the mission with Ethan because the CIA doesn't like the way that the IMF handled the plutonium situation when it first happened. And the IMF evidently does not have its own plane to fly its agents places. Secret government organization that has all this wonderful tech to, you know, build masks out of people's faces in like a laptop, but does not have its own plane to fly you. Okay, sure. Anyways, going on, we need a reason for Walker to be with Ethan so we can have that tension, whatever. So they go to Paris, which just, we get a number of shots of Paris. And normally I feel like, oh, everyone wants to go to Paris. Oh, everyone thinks Paris is so great. I've never been to Paris, but I like sometimes just roll my eyes at how great people think Paris is. I actually quite want to go to Paris after watching this film. It doesn't super focus on the shots. It's not like, you know, glorifying shots of Paris, but it shoots it well enough that I'm like, gosh, Paris looks gorgeous. And I know you're probably only picking and choosing certain parts where you are, but I now just really want to go and like walk around Paris. Why have I never been to Paris? Dang it. But so anyways, in this, you do also get Ilsa, who was in the last one as a sort of double, triple undercover agent. I'm not even quite sure how you would define Ilsa. Definitely where you do sometimes question her motives in the last film, and you do sometimes question her motives in this one, because she is still in a very, I want to trust you, but I don't think I can trust you sort of position as regards to Ethan and the rest of the IMF team regarding what they're trying to do. Her objective is slightly different, but keeps putting her in their path. I think it's very interesting, and this is not really a spoiler because this is in the trailer. You do get Ethan's wife in this film, which we saw in three. I don't quite remember too much about the first three. I have definitely seen them, but I'm struggling to remember which one is which and what happened in each. He at one point got married and then had to hide his wife away. We do get sort of references to her at times. She shows up a bit more in this one than she did in the fifth one. But I remember watching the fifth one and thinking, huh, Ilsa kind of looks like his wife. And then you get them both in this film and I'm like, yeah, Ilsa looks like his wife. And given the way she and Ethan, you know, act towards each other, I feel very secure in the idea I had in the fifth one that you're kind of putting her in as like a replacement for his wife, as like the new love interest or something. But you did purposefully like pick actors who looked quite similar, right? Like, I feel you had to have done that on purpose, because if you just did that by accident, that's quite amazing, given the way we play with Ilsa and the wife, whose name is Julia, which I had totally forgotten. But so anyways, in this, you do get, of course, the high-tech stuff. You do also get action scenes, as you always did, and Mission Impossible seems just determined to, like, constantly up the action scenes. Like, what did we do in the last... Okay, in the first film, we have that, you know, drop down right above the floor thing that everyone now spoofs. And then, you know, in the fourth one, we climb that really high building in Dubai. How can we top that? How can we top that? In the fifth one, you have that scene where he took off on a plane. And I know Tom Cruise really likes to do his own stunts, but there were some stunts in this film where I found myself actually trying really hard to, like, watch and see if I could sort of see the digital seams or whatever, to see if I could tell where certain things were CGI. Because there were some where I was just like, I don't believe he could do that. Not that I don't believe he would do that. I think if he could do it, he probably would totally want to do that stunt. But I'm not sure I physically buy that Tom Cruise could do that. Some of those stunts are amazing, amazing and intense. And there is a rather long sort of multi-parted car motorcycle chase through Paris in this film, which is part of why you get so many great shots of Paris without, you know, or purposefully trying to make Paris look beautiful. You get them starting in a truck and then into a car and then on a motorcycle. This is a long chase, but it's amazing. Like, it was great. It was tense. I knew from the trailer that chase probably could not end until a certain point, and yet I still found myself very tense and anxious watching it as he's, like, swerving between cars, heading straight on towards them because he's going, you know, on the wrong side of the street. I was just like, oh my gosh, like, he was squirming. And I was like, I know you can't end until a certain point because I've seen the trailer and something has to happen and that hasn't happened yet, but I'm not sure. Again, and also you're the main character of this film, and I'm pretty sure we probably want to do another one because it just seems we always want to do another one. So you're probably not going to die, like, at least right now. We're only about halfway through the movie, but oh my gosh, am I worried for you. Please stop. Please get, you know, not in a crazy car chase. Okay, let's go. The car chase was great to watch. Just, oh man, cool action scenes. Though again, there were parts where I was just like, something in here, there has to be parts where this was not physically done, right? They did this on a set somewhere. I can't tell, but I feel this had to be somewhere just because it's so insane. And actually, it's so insane to the point that it makes the latter part of the film feel not that great, not that, oh my gosh, amazing. Because you do get, and again, this is also in the trailer, there is a scene later on involving climbing up a rope onto a helicopter and then flying said helicopter. And we're supposed to feel, you know, oh my gosh, is he going to make it because he's free climbing a rope attached to a helicopter and then we see him fall. And at that point, I was just sort of like, can we move on? Like, I kind of already know where this is going. This is not as cool as that car chase. I kind of... Not that I don't care, but it just feels like you want me to care more than I do. Because while that's happening, there's multiple parts of things happening at different times, both in the car chase and the helicopter scene where Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt is, he's doing one thing and then you get like Benji and maybe Benji and Luther doing something else. And then you get Ilsa and then you get some other characters. And so I'm never too confused. I mean, I couldn't point out on a map where they were in Paris during almost any of those points in the car chase, but I'm never too confused on who's doing what where during those action scenes. There is one action scene that involves the lights going out in the film, and I'm super confused on how even they know what's going on. But for the two main ones, I'm not confused. I'm just sort of like, you're spreading me too thin here. Like, I need to focus on something or otherwise I don't care because you're so spread out that obviously this is going to work out. Like, if I was only focused on the one thing, then all my, like, is he going to live or die would be on that one person. But since you're showing multiple people, I kind of feel it has to. because we don't have any sort of strong focus on any one person to the point that I'm like, save again for just, and it wasn't even, I thought he'd die. I just thought he'd like crash into a car. So save for that. I was just like, yeah, I kind of get that you're probably going to make it. There was a moment near the end where I was a little afraid for one character, and you do get some characters in this where I'm just like, are you gonna make it? Are you not gonna make it? I am super surprised about whether or not, you know, you live or die, and I don't want to spoil that, but it's just like, okay, but move on. Okay, but okay, I was with that character and you cut away from that character, so move on so we can get back to that character, because I already am just like assured that whatever is happening right now is gonna be fine. I liked this film overall. There's some talk about whether or not if this is Tom Cruise's final Mission Impossible. And I kind of feel that since I think we kind of had that conversation, you know, at 3 and then at 4 when we brought in Jeremy Renner, it's just like, yeah, we've already said that rumor before. So I'm not even putting any stock in it whatsoever. Like, I feel Tom Cruise would totally want to do another one, though, again, physically, I'm not sure he's up for it, and that's not just an age, that's a, you've probably put yourself through a number of things doing the previous ones, because those stunts are a little intense. Don't you want to do something else, or something not as let me try and kill my body or something? I like that it tied in kind of, in that I felt like, oh, okay, I understand the story more from the get-go. And that might be why when we get a couple of expositional scenes, one with the mission that, of course, self-destructs, and then later with a character explaining things, I'm just like, I already know this. And maybe it's because I just saw the fifth one more recently than maybe the audience, or I remember things better or something. Why are you telling me this so expositionally? Oh my gosh, exposition character or exposition device. Wow. So much exposition, move on. Like, I was like, I feel like I got a good amount of that from the fifth story, and fine, it's been a few years since the fifth movie. I got it, move on. So yeah, what really makes this film was the action pieces, not so much the script writing. The villain felt a bit obvious. Like, really? I was like, was anyone surprised when we got the villain? The dialogue, particularly with the exposition scenes, was just like, got it, move on. But the action scenes were pretty cool. I was actually on the edge of my seat for a number of them. Once we get past the helicopters in the final scene, I'm just like, okay, I still don't know if this is going to end well. But yeah, so overall, I quite like this. I think maybe certainly up there tied with me for Mission Impossible 4, although I have major problems with that film, and particularly the way they treated Paula Patton's character. I don't even remember too much of Mission Impossibles 1, 2, or 3, so I can't really rank it there. Better than 5, really good summer action film for what it is. So, we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts television podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts television podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second based off of a TV show movie today is Get Smart. This stars Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway. And I remember seeing the trailers for this when it was coming out and just thinking, that looks kind of dumb. And also, I feel like Anne Hathaway is better than this movie deserves. And then now having seen that film, yes, I agree with both of my earlier thoughts. Though when I first saw the trailer, I don't think I knew it was based off of a TV show, and I somehow learned it in the meantime. And so going in, I'm just like, there's an opening scene where Steve Carell is walking into, I guess it's Control. It looks like a museum, and so I'm not sure what the regular public thinks this building is other than a museum. And so the guy who's walking in with stacks of papers, who do you think he is? But in this museum, you get a lot of different things that I think were in the original TV show, like the shoe phone and the car and the suit. It's like, ah, yes, Control was an organization that fought the organization Chaos back in the day, but that's all been settled, except no, of course it hasn't. We've just become more secretive, but we let the general public believe this is not the case. So Steve Carell plays Max Smart, who is a analyst, I think, at Control, which is another secret government organization that's just made up, I guess, for TV shows and movies like IMF and Mission Impossible, because in both of them, we do actually acknowledge that the CIA exists, so it's then not clear what does the actual agency we're dealing with exist for if we do also have the CIA, whatever. Control evidently has a number of agents to the point that the agents get numbers instead of names. So you get like Agent 99 is played by Anne Hathaway and Agent 23 is played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And I think there's Bill Murray's in this for a moment as Agent 13, and Max, he wants to be a field agent and he passed the test finally with flying colors after like 8 attempts or something. But his boss doesn't want to let him become a field agent because he's a really, really good analyst, even though his reports are hundreds of pages long and put everyone in the meetings to sleep. So it's not clear how this information gets out at all if he can't put it out in a really good way. But he at least learns a lot and has a lot of information about things, I guess. We're supposed to believe he's really good at his job somehow. But he wants to be a field agent. He passed the test but doesn't become an agent. And then Control is attacked. The actual headquarters is attacked somehow. And all the agents out in the field have their identities known and get killed. So we only have a few agents left. We have to put Max in the field because we don't have that many. He's going to team up with Agent 99, played by Anne Hathaway, because luckily for her, she just had plastic surgery, so she doesn't look at all like her old self, and so her cover is still good. And so they go on this mission. They're trying to find Terrence Stamp's character, whose name I totally can't remember, because he seems to have a plan to, you know, do something terrible, but it's a little complicated. He's got people working under him, but he seems to be working for some shadowy voice person. So we know certain people, but not other people. We're trying to foil a plot that eventually we find out is, you know, we're possibly going to try and kill the president. Because, of course, we are. So along the way, you get Agent 99 and Max. And Agent 99 is not pleased to be working with Max because he's not a field agent. He doesn't have experience where she's, you know, definitely an experienced field agent. And then you start getting this sort of, they're not competing, but they're somewhat arguing at times. And so like the first time you see this, they're on a plane to get to wherever they're going. And it's just a regular commercial flight. And they're supposed to be playing, I think, husband and wife. And so they're like, okay, we need to work on our cover story so that our stories match. And so that she, you know, explains, we met whenever, we dated for however long, we got married, whatever, we don't have kids. And this turns into this whole side conversation about, you know, why don't we have kids? Doesn't she want kids? A woman of her age, you know. And it's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? A, this is not real. So why would Agent 99, who feels, you know, rather competent, get so into this argument as if we're actually, this is supposed to be your cover. This is not about you, really. It's supposed to be about your cover not having kids. Never mind why you yourself don't have kids. why are you engaging in this stupid conversation with him? And this comes up a number of times about her and like her age and if she's feminine enough. And it's just like that, along with the fact that Max's character used to be fat, and we keep getting references to that. And I'm just like, I can already see, even if this was not just a dumbly written script, that people would have problems with some of the, you know, quote unquote things you're making jokes about. Oh, move on. Oh, please get on. And I just, the script is not great. It's not very good. Anne Hathaway does well with what she's given, but she's not given a lot per se. And even though she's supposed to be the super capable agent, we do have to have Max come in and, you know, save her at some point, because of course we do. This feels a bit like when we did the, I think it was the Ant-Man and Wasp thing, and the thing about competent women, but then guys. Anyways, moving on. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you can tell this is one of his earlier works, that his style of, you know, portraying, you know, the big, strong guy who seems great at everything, it's not as well tongue-in-cheek as he probably could do it nowadays. You do get some other people in this control office, played by Terry Crews, and I cannot remember the other actor's name. And it's just like, wait, you work for a secret government agent that does spies, and you're this idiotic? Really? Like, everything in this film just feels rather dumb. There is a long, long drawn-out scene involving Max trying to fire off this special Swiss Army knife he's got that keeps firing off, like, they're not grappling hooks, they're arrows, but they have, like, twine attached to them so you could connect them to things and then, I guess, pull yourself up or whatever. And he keeps messing up with this multiple times, but he's in such a situation when this is happening that I'm just like, there is no way you're allowed to do this more than, like, maybe twice. Am I supposed to believe that anyone is actually competent at their job, given the way Max is able to get out of certain situations? Like, there is a dance-off in this for I don't even know what reason, because I'm not quite sure what it achieves, but it then still also plays with the sort of fat jokes, and I'm just like, but why? There is a, I don't even know what to call it, where Max knows something about one of the bad guys and uses that to his advantage. But it's so unbelievable that A, that would work, and B, it would have as long-term an effect as we see that it does. And I'm just like, just, are we done yet? Like, even though this movie is called Get Smart, it's actually really dumb. And pretty much everything that the characters do or say feels solely because that's what the script told them to do. And we need to get to the next scene, and so I'm just going to shoehorn this in here. It doesn't necessarily make sense for your character or the setting or whatever, but we need to get on to the next scene, so sure, let's just do that. The final action scene, set piece, whatever, it's not horrendous as regards, you know, action. It also still has things where I could see certain people would have problems with because of the content of something that they do. It doesn't, again, feel believable. But at this point, you know, this is not supposed to be the cool, oh my gosh, wasn't that amazing spy film or TV show like a Mission Impossible or like a James Bond. It's clearly supposed to be sort of spoofy, but not in the, we're making fun of the tropes of that genre, more in the, we're just going to take that genre and put it in a dumb setting with dumb characters. And haha, isn't that funny? Except it wasn't really. I did not really laugh. I could tell there were certain parts that, you know, were meant to be funny, were meant to be the main joke. And I was just like, This is from, I think, 2008. So about a decade ago now from when I'm recording. And I'm just like, oh, so yeah. Steve Carell definitely improved. Dwayne Johnson's improved in his career. I'd actually even say Terry Crews has improved. Anne Hathaway, even when this film came out, was better than this film deserved. And is most definitely so now, because I'm just now thinking of her in Ocean's 8 and comparing that Anne Hathaway to this Anne Hathaway. It's just like, oh, much better film. Much prefer you in that. Good Lord, I had a hard time with this film. So I do not know how it compares to the TV show. It does not compare favorably to the other film today, Mission Impossible Fallout. It doesn't compare favorably to most films. So I would say give it a pass. And on that, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.